Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through education and application of EQ and SQ. And our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, college and medical schools, and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of individual and the team as a one connected whole. Today, our gifted guest speaker is one of MCCG board member, Dr. Kimia Saraf, MD-MPH. She is founder and CEO and director of Lodestar, and we talk about trauma-informed coaching practice. I call Kimia my soul sister as we connected spontaneously when we met back in 2019 before pandemic through our blogs writing projects at IOC. And she has been a continuous contributor, resource, and board member for MCCG since then. Hi, Dr. Kimia. How are you?
I am doing fine, my friend. And don't forget that we are first and foremost, we are friends also. Thank you for that lovely introduction this evening.
Yes, we are friends and soul sister, and we have so many things in common. We both are Persian, and just at least half, you're half Persian. So
I am.
Yeah, so many common things. And that's what how universe has brought us together for a good cause. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kimia. What do you like the world and our audience know about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are so many paths that you just opened up to me. I would say that probably the least interesting things about me are my degrees. The most interesting things about me are probably that I am a mom to four sons. I have four boys. And wow. I live on a little farm, a little working farm in central Illinois. And that my passion work and my work as a healer in this world is really centered in trauma-informed and trauma-responsive practices in every space and place that I occupy, not just in my coaching or in the medical schools or in my teaching, but also in how I try to live and move through the world. And I think that's truly the beauty of becoming trauma responsive, is that it can become a part of who we are and how we move.
Exactly. Beautiful. And you not only teach and learn about the trauma, but you also live it. So that's the trauma mitigation. But just, I want to go to the basic. That define trauma. So what do you call the trauma in life? Just tell us a little bit about the little t trauma and the big t trauma.
Well, I think it's important to remember that trauma is very subjective. So what lands as trauma for one individual may not for someone else. It has a lot to do with lived experience. Has a lot to do with how well resourced we feel at any given point in time, how well resourced we are at any point in time. Mm-hmm. So there are things that can amplify or make worse a toxic stress experience or a very stressful experience or a very stressful event and elevate it or amplify it into something that embeds itself as trauma. And beautifully, there are also things that can disrupt those very high toxic stress events or experiences. And so they don't land as trauma for us. Mm-hmm. And that really is the opportunity that exists in learning and becoming intimately acquainted with what are the things that make it worse and what are the things that make it better. Because when we begin to know that, and we begin to notice that someone is having a toxic stress experience, we can also then deploy skills or tools that can help to mitigate that for them and for ourselves. So I think that that's an important thing to always remember is that trauma is very subjective.
It
It
is,
also is
yeah.
cumulative and compounding. So there are certainly what we would call traumatic events that are universally recognized, things like an assault or an accident. Environmental catastrophes. We are watching, I think many of us with horror and sorrow, the earthquake in Turkey and Syria.
Exactly.
These are those big events that we tend to think of as traumatic events. And yet in medical school, we learn a really important principle, and that is that the dose makes the poison. And what that means is that as we have a higher and higher exposure to dosage of toxic stress, unrelenting toxic stress in particular, and when it's accompanied by things that worsen it, things like prolonged uncertainty, things like loss of control, loss of agency, real or perceived, when it's amplified by things like disconnection, isolation, loneliness. Now it's starting to sound familiar, right? It's starting to sound a little bit like the last 3 years of our collective lived experience.
Yes.
That toxic stress exposure also can end up becoming embodied as a traumatic experience and start to show up in the same way. Also very important to remember that trauma can be experienced in a number of ways. There is primary trauma, those traumas that happen directly to us. There also are secondary traumas, the traumas that are occurring to the people who are close to us, the people who we are responsible for, the people we love and care about. And then there are vicarious traumas, the traumas that we absorb through watching and listening to the stories of harm done to others.
I see.
And we have experienced a lot of all of that trauma over the last several years. And then finally, there also are the traumas of moral injury. And these are a little different in that the traumas of moral injury are less about harm done to us than the harm we experience for as a result of being separated from our integrity, required or asked or forced by circumstance, usually, to engage in a way that does not allow us to live out our purpose. So for many, many physicians, the traumas of moral injury of the last several years is the result of not being able to care for patients in the way they swore they would.
I can see. Yeah, I love it the way you put, I mean, everything together. There is so much depth in what you are talking about, especially the secondary trauma, like the secondhand smoking that sometimes is, you know, just hurting you even more than the first-hand trauma, especially as a parent, you know, when you see your children, what they are going through, it may affect you even more than if you had gone through the same, you know, experience. And also, yeah, the moral injuries, especially in the healthcare, you know, profession and space. What are you noticing, Kimia, is coming up often both for our clients also and our colleagues in the healthcare or coaching community?
Yeah. Well, the thing that I find is coming up the most is relief. When we are able to give a name to something and name it appropriately, oh, yeah, you know what? Trauma is pretty universal. And it is not to say that the trauma one person experienced is better or worse, as bad as, less bad than the next. I often say there's no trauma Olympics, but that the experience has been almost universal is a bit of an exhale, because what then people begin to realize is that there are things that they can do to understand the activation of their threat detection systems, because that, more than anything else, is what we're seeing show up. Our brains are designed really to keep us alive. And we have this lovely threat detection system that is continually scanning the environment for signs that we are safe or unsafe. And what toxic stress, what trauma do is they teach our brain about unsafety. And it can prime it. It can really prime that threat detection system, make it more sensitive to perceived threat. So if you have been under tremendous, unrelenting stress and perhaps in unsafe experiences, let's just think about our frontline workers, our frontline physicians over the last several years, particularly in the first year and a half to 2 years of the pandemic. They were physically unsafe, right?
Yes.
Compounded by profound uncertainty. How bad is this? How bad is it going to get? How infectious is this?
Yeah, the
Are we going
unknown.
to run out of PPE? So as their threat detection system tries to adjust to that very high level of unrelenting threat, on the backside of that, there needs to be a recognition and a bit of time for resetting of that threat detection system. And none of that has occurred, in part because we haven't had time, in part because the threat continues to shift. And it becomes really important at this point to remember that the brain does not differentiate between physical threat and social threat. So it reads the threat of being excluded, the threat of being thrown out of community, the threat of disruption of relationship in the same way that it reads physical threat. And so we have this system that has been so continually activated, so continually primed, that is oftentimes right now misinterpreting the degree of threat at any given moment. And when that happens and it activates a reaction to a perceived threat, we end up acting in ways that we really don't expect to act. I've had CEOs calling me and talking about throwing things across boardrooms and slamming doors and saying, I have never been this guy in my life. I've had directors of ERs make similar comments. I've had folks call and say, I can't seem to get anything done. We sometimes call it unbearable stuckitude. Folks who are very, very high performers who have never had difficulty following through on task or projects, who can't seem to move on anything. And all of it is the system trying to figure out how to conserve energy at the tail end of what has been a very, very exhausting slog for a lot of folks. So, fight, flight, freeze, submit, it looks like a lot of things, but activation of our threat detection system doesn't show up and say, oh, hey, I'm being self-protective. It shows up looking like avoidance or apathy or disdain or disengagement or anger or rage. And so helping folks to unwind what's underneath that is super helpful because doctors want to know. They want to understand why they're feeling the way that they are. And then they want to have some tools to begin to countermand the effects. And noticing it, noticing the activation and that it shows up in the body, naming it, knowing that it's normal, that so many of us are experiencing similar things, and then deciding how to navigate it. All of these are really helpful skills to begin to learn.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely, our self-awareness is one of the biggest tools that we have, as you mentioned, name it to tame it. Just knowing that this is a little T trauma or a big T trauma. So when the grocery cart, the grocery person, I mean, mess up my order, I shouldn't consider it. That's a big trauma. It's just a little trauma. So don't overreact to it. Don't have an amygdala hijack for little traumas, with little T's in life. So just knowing that, how we label things, how we categorize, anything that we conceive and perceive as a threat to us, that's half a way help to ourselves. And just talking about the tools that we can have, and since we are in the coaching field, I assume that coaching is one of the tools that is considered to be helpful for the trauma mitigation and the reaction and our responses. But what differentiates the trauma-informed coaching than the therapy? So what's the benefit of the coaching to therapy?
Yeah, it's a great question. So therapeutic relationships, and you and I both know this as clinicians, in a therapeutic relationship, I am viewed as the expert, right? So someone is coming to me as the content expert, as the science expert, as the medical expert, as the therapeutic expert, and asking for a diagnosis and a treatment plan. And that's the job. So that's the nature of a therapeutic relationship. And I am a huge, I want to just say, huge fan of therapy for folks. In a coaching relationship, let's just take the other end of the spectrum. In a pure coaching relationship, the client is the expert on their life, right? They are capable and competent. They are considered to be whole and creative. And it is the coach's job to listen deeply, to ask those curious questions that help open up new paths, new ways of thinking that maybe the client hadn't considered before, to hold accountability, with the client for the client's outcomes and goals. But that's the key. It's the client's. The client is the one who sets the agenda, makes the diagnosis, and holds the treatment plan. That's all client-based. Well, look, there's always been overlap in the Venn diagram between the two. It's always existed. What trauma-informed coaching opens up, or a trauma-informed path opens up for experienced coaches, is the possibility of holding a little greater space. Recognizing that we are all coming into coaching with our entirety of our lived experiences. And so being able to hold those stories, those big stories, those traumatic stories, when the client chooses to bring them in as part of figuring out their what's next. It is very difficult to chart your path forward, ignoring everything that came before. It's an unrealistic expectation. Now, the difference is that in a therapeutic relationship, you're going to really dig into the roots of those stories. That is not true in a trauma-informed approach, right? Therapeutic relationships require subspecialty training. Those folks go through years and decades of school to become very skilled at how to dig. Trauma-informed does not excavate. It holds space for big emotions when they show up, for big feelings when they make an appearance, but it doesn't dig at root causes. It allows the client to choose always, completely, how much they bring in and how much is necessary in order for them to plan their next steps. But it doesn't shy away from that. It simply says you can bring in what you need to bring in.
Exactly. Yes, you mentioned in a coaching relationship, the clients are have the driving wheel, so they decide, where they want to go and how they want to get there. But also, I mean, what's the interesting for me is just the difference between the coaching and the therapy is just the therapists dig into the past, as you mentioned, and the stories. In a coaching relationship, we look into the future and moving toward the goal with our client toward that future, no matter what the past has been, as long as it doesn't interfere to getting to that point. And this has values, you know, in the relationship that we have, you know, for the coaching. And that's a question actually I wanted to ask you. How do you see the value of the trauma responsive coaching mindset, both not only for us as coaches, but also for our clients, especially in the healthcare community?
Yeah. Well, I think the value is in being able to hold it. Right? It's coming whether we want to acknowledge it or not. It's coming into the room with our clients. And so it is like any other additive skill that as we become more adept at noticing it and being able to navigate it lightly with our clients, we're better able to serve our clients. The idea that it doesn't exist or that it can only exist in a therapeutic relationship is a disservice. And so learning how to recognize when a client needs more. Listen, I have had clients who, you know, a few sessions in, we circle back to the idea that perhaps more would be beneficial to them. Therapy would be beneficial as an additive resource, right?
Yes.
So it isn't an either or, it is a both and. Both therapy and coaching can be very useful, and learning how to notice those signs that say, oh, this is a client who might benefit from more. Being very transparent about the limits and the boundaries around the coaching relationship from the beginning, and knowing how to navigate that adroitly with our clients is very valuable, because the idea that it's not walking into the room is really, I think it's a disservice, because we all are bringing the entirety of our lived experiences with us.
Yeah, and I believe also coaching not only is helpful for the clients, but also is helpful for the therapists who are working with the client too. I've heard from many therapists that when they are working with the clients that have the coaches, the efficiency of their work is much better than just
Absolutely.
Going through therapy alone.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so we all agree on that. But just tell me, what's the next step for applying that? What do you think that is most is needed before to rebuild this capacity in our profession, both in an individual and the group level?
Well, the thing that I love that has, you know, sometimes there is, you know, there's beauty in the brokenness. And 3 years ago, 4 years ago, to find discussions about trauma in coaching circles was a bit lonely. And what I noticed today is that increasingly organizations, including the ICF, the IOC, you know, my course is now certified by the ICF. These things are being viewed as not outside of the realm of coaches, so long as properly skilled, right? And again, it truly is, I think, a space for those who have some maturity, lived experience, maturity of professional experience, maturity of coaching experience as well. And they are skills that can be taught and learned and utilized that don't, that do not cross ethical lines, ethical boundaries into therapeutic treatment. And that's what, that's the value of really learning to be trauma informed. It can be applied in any engagement, any encounter, at any time.
Yeah, thank you very much. And just I heard that you were talking about your courses, and I think that's a good space and place that I can happily announce that we also are be offering your courses through the MCCG new website education tab coming soon. And the good news, as you mentioned, for the physicians and coaches is that when they take these courses, not only they are adding a skill and a tool to their belt, but also they can earn CME and ICF credential for it as well. So just killing many birds with one stone. And just at
Yeah,
the
our course is accredited for 20 Category 1 CME and 23 ICF core credits. So quite a big bite of the credits that you need.
That's wonderful. And I can say it has many, many other credits that, it may doesn't count anywhere, but I mean, personally, when you take that, you just feel it that how, effective has been for you with your relationship with yourself also and with the people around you. And just at the end, Kimia, just can you tell us how people can find you? So do you have any website, any email? So except that through
I
MCCG website. So that's the
think through your website is the very best way, absolutely. And we appreciate the fact that you're going to be announcing our classes. All of our classes for the first half of this year of 2023 are already full.
Wow.
And we hope to be announcing opening additional classes for the second half of the year, probably in late March. I'll have those on the calendar. And people can also reach us through our website, which is Lodestar, LodeStarPC.com.
Definitely. And yeah, keep us in the same page. We are going to make that announcement for the future course also. And they can read more information on your bio also on the founder tab, also on the MCCG website too. Being that said, Kimia, Dr. Kimia, thank you so much for your time and your friendship and your sisterhood, and really appreciate your wisdom tonight.
Oh, it was lovely being here with you. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Goodbye to our listeners, and remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.